Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another fantastic night of Fandom Access. I am your ever faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations. So, we got a pretty decent show tonight. We got Fear of the Walking Dead, The Walking Dead World Beyond, Doctor Who, Lock and Key. I'm not sure how many episodes we're going to discuss, but we're going to discuss it. And we're finally going to talk about the rest of Midnight Mass. So, as soon as my co-hosts get here, we will carry on. So, oh, look, I have a lady caller. Good evening.
Hello, AJ, how are you?
I am good. I just saw a text from
Great.
Jamie. She said, oh crap, I'll be there in a minute. I don't think she realized what time it was.
Because she sent it at like she wasn't late yet. She sent it at like 9:59. She's on time. Well, or she will be in a second. We have a kind of a busy night tonight, right? Again.
Yes. Six shows.
Those are TV's back. Things are back in production, and we have a full slate of winter shows, which is great.
You know what's really funny? I don't even know what shows I watch anymore. Like, it's like we'll be going along and everything, and all of a sudden we'll be like, oh, one of the shows we talk about is back. Like, I have no idea. With the way the world is now, where there's really no TV season anymore. It was always, the fall season, and then spring and summer there was reruns. Now there's just TV all year round. So I never know when anything is on.
I know. Plus, we had a year of, all production delays and production being messed up and stuff is, off schedule, out of sync, whatever.
Actually, I've got a question for you while we wait for what's her name there, Jamie. I've seen a couple articles floating around lately. Actually, here she is, but I'll still ask it.
Hi.
Good evening,
sorry,
Jamie.
Guys.
That's okay.
I was editing my Wheel of Time videos and I forgot.
I know you guys are starting with Walking Dead, the Walking Dead shows. So that's perfect for me to ask this question.
Okay,
I've seen a couple headlines. Okay. Well,
yeah.
You know what I mean. So I've seen a couple headlines here and there, and since I haven't watched Fear or The Walking Dead forever, and I've never watched
World Beyond.
The other one, World Beyond. Basically, the headline said was The Walking Dead needs to end because it just keeps using the same story in each show.
Well, yeah.
And I was just curious, do you guys feel that way? I guess right now, I don't know what's going on in the World Beyond, but I know that the Walking Dead is working, they've got the Commonwealth story going. And from what I gather from the article, there's a very similar storyline with a military base or something in the World Beyond.
CRM, yeah. Yep. Yeah. They're like a very advanced society. Militaristic society.
Well, to me, I'd say no, but I don't know anything about the Commonwealth yet. So,
yeah, they're like a very enormous, like tens of thousands of people living in a military-controlled society. That we're not sure of their motives. So that's very Commonwealth-ish, right?
Yes. So each time you guys talk about the shows, you can just, remember what you said the last time from the other show, and it's the same thing.
Well, yeah. And also, I think tonight, Jamie and I, when we talk about, Fear the Walking Dead, I feel like Victor Strand is the new Negan, new governor / Negan. Like,
oh, no.
They keep recycling this sort of,
that I would agree with. I keep trying
charismatic. Villain who
the
won't
thing
shut
is,
the fuck up
Strand
ever.
Was a good character. They just keep making things worse.
They just ruined them. They ruined them, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
I was
yeah,
just
going to
say,
they,
I liked
they
Strand when Fear started.
Oh, yeah. So did I. Yeah. I liked him up until this season. Until last season, really.
Yeah, pretty much until
started
he
started to ruin
him
last season.
So just out of curiosity, on Fear, are Strand and Alicia the only OGs left?
And Daniel.
Daniel is still around.
Yeah, except Strand's the only one who's ever on it.
That's right, because Luciana wasn't there at the very, very beginning, right? She came up, I think, a little later.
No. She's season two, maybe, or three, maybe two.
Yeah,
I think it was two.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, they do, I think, AJ, keep recycling the same storylines. And I guess that's a great way to start off the show.
All right,
why don't
you ladies take it away.
Right into that. Let's jump right into that.
You don't want to do Doctor Who first?
Oh, we want to do Doctor Who first? Yeah, let's do Doctor Who first.
Yeah, let's not do Doctor Who. Before we do Doctor Who, though, I just want to mention two things. The first, and obviously you guys know this, but if anybody hasn't read my tweets yet to know this, Thursday I'm doing a one-on-one with Tatiana Maslany to talk about Orphan Black next chapter, so people can send me their questions. I'm really excited about that. There's also a conference, too, with her, Christian Brun, Evelyn Brochu, and Jordan, I never know how to say his name, Gavaris, the one who plays her brother. Anyway, there's also that, but I don't know how much we're going to get to be involved with that. But anyway, people can send their questions. So that's coming up. And then hopefully, if my head keeps enough that I don't feel like it's going to explode the rest of tonight, I'm hopefully going to have at least one of the Wheel of Time interviews up for tomorrow, because the embargo lifts tomorrow. So that is also coming, because I have three of those to post. And then Ragdoll, but that's neither here nor there. Okay, sorry. I just wanted to mention that. Okay, well.
All right, great.
Let's start Doctor Who. So I liked this week a lot better, because I felt like it was one story more than a bunch of them shoved together, because it was like all pretty much. I mean, they had the Centaurans and the other aliens, but I mean, like, it felt like one more cohesive story to me. Did you think that, or did you still feel like it was shoved?
No, I thought I felt like it was still kind of a mess with a bunch of stuff happening and all over the place and characters separated and so it was not as much of a mess as last week, but I don't feel. I mean, they did dedicate most of the time to the Doctor and the Crimean War, and that storyline was a little better. But I feel like there's still too much stuff going on that's a little bit all over the place and anyway, I felt like it was still pretty all over the place. I wouldn't say I loved it. I'd say it wasn't as bad as last week.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked it. I mean, it's not like the best episode ever, but they probably could have done like just the Centaurans, but I get that this other alien race is there. I mean, I think they should have left out the part where the guy from the, what do you want to call it, from Victorian times showed up. That was adding more crap in that didn't need to be there. But other than that, I mean, I thought it was okay. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I like Dan a lot, although because they're putting so much of Dan, and I love Dan and Carvanista, though, together. They're really funny. But because of that, they're once again kind of screwing over Yaz and pushing her back, which kind of stinks. I mean, like I said, I very much enjoyed Dan, but I kind of still feel like that kind of sucks.
I didn't enjoy Dan.
I did like – you what?
I don't enjoy Dan. Go ahead, but I'm going to tell you why
I like
later.
Dan a lot. Anyway, I was going to say, though, I do like Yaz, her scenes with Vinder. But, I mean, I still think we don't necessarily need all those companions. But I don't know. I think Dan's really funny. I like his scenes with Carvanista and them kind of arguing back and forth. And, I mean, he's brash and he just kind of rushes into things. But I don't know. I find him funny and I find him fun. Although it is at her expense, I mean, because they are kind of not putting her in enough. But But other than that, overall, I like him. But I don't know. I like this story. I think it was nice to see the Centaurans again. I think it is interesting that they're riding horses, which is kind of funny. I was going to say, I did appreciate the part of the storyline where the general of the army, that he, to get revenge, that, like, he kills them in the end, or, I mean, they didn't actually say they were dead, but you're to assume, I guess, they were, but that he goes and kills them in the end, even though they retreated, and kind of her being like, this is why sometimes I don't know if I should help humans, because it's showing. And then obviously the nurse felt differently, but I don't know. I just thought that was interesting because she's always like, doesn't kill anybody. And really they did retreat, but I felt like it was more realistic that he didn't listen, even though he was an ass for not listening. Like, I don't know. I just thought that that was kind of interesting. But yeah, I mean, I guess really, if I think about it, they do also have the other storyline with Carvanista and that in, and maybe it is a little bit lot. But I don't know. Overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun episode. It did have some extra stuff. I also, the other thing is, and I think at first it wasn't super clear, I guess, but when I rewatched it, I definitely got the fact, although I had a headache when I watched it the first time, but so that might be why. But Swarm, I don't know if he cares about time breaking apart or he doesn't want it to happen either, but, like, I guess I was a little confused at first that he replaced the broken Lori with Yaz and Vinder to stop it from whatever, not that it won't kill them, but to stop from whatever's supposed to happening. Like, I wasn't sure at first if he was doing it to stop time or just to piss off the doctor, maybe a bit of both. But I think it was supposed to be to stop whatever was going to happen, the cataclysm of whatever. Yeah, a little confusing, but now tell me what you think. Go ahead. You can talk now. Sorry.
Well, so, I mean, so the story of the doctor in the Crimean War was pretty good, and I do think, I mean, I kind of like, I mean, I've liked in these three seasons with 13 and Chris Chibnall writing, I think we've liked all of the historical episodes for the most part.
Yeah.
And you know, they have been much more in-depth, I think. Like, in the past, Doctor Who would run into some historical characters, but they were maybe sort of comedic or they weren't. Like, these have been sort of more serious
yeah.
examinations, I think. And maybe more obscure characters, whereas, like, we had previously maybe seen the Doctor in World War One and World War Two. This was the Crimean War. Or, you know, we saw the Doctor last season, 2 seasons ago with Rosa Parks or with, okay, that's not obscure, but, you know, or
yeah, I know
the partition of Pakistan is a little, partition of India and Pakistan is a little less,
yeah, we're
right?
Like,
I've liked the way they've done that.
Hitler type thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No.
Yes, it's like Trump and Hitler. Right. So I've kind of liked the way they've, I like that Chibnall's doing that. I have also liked,
mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I kind of like, you know, the part where the general listened to her or whatever. And I felt like that's part of the, like, finally we're seeing the doctor being a woman sort of playing into how she's being treated. I mean, we've seen it, but we haven't really seen it, right? And
yeah, there,
and the
yeah,
doctor,
there's also a part where he was kind of like, you don't speak for us. And I felt that that was definitely saying, like, if she had been the 12th doctor, he might have listened. I appreciate,
well,
that what you're talking about? Because I kind of appreciated that, too.
Yes, he won't listen to her because she's a woman, really, right? And
she can't even be a doctor. She's a doctress or whatever. Like, he doesn't even accept that she's.
Well, and
he
also won't listen to her when she says, this is going to be a disaster and everyone's going to get killed. And he's like, whatever, you're a woman. I'm not listening to you, right? Like, that also is,
mm-hmm.
is part of, like, what we saw going. So, you know, like, that's playing a part in it. I that was really interesting. Also, what else was I going to say about this? There was another part where the doctor not being whatever. Anyway, like I felt like, oh, okay, that's cool. That, like, I liked that. I liked that it's the Crimean War. I liked.
I think
Mary,
the Centaurans also kind of dismissed her a little bit too. and we're like surprised.
Oh, yeah,
wait,
so
you're the doctor?
Was,
like,
so
where did that come from?
That was a was a really great part also, where the Centaurans basically like believe, like assume that the doctor can't be a woman, right? And the doc,
right.
Like when she says, "I have information about the doctor," like they, it's funny because like the doctor sworn enemy of the Centaurans, who's like tricked them so many times, and yet they still fall for it.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's because she's a woman, and they,
right,
they, right. So I mean, I liked all of that. I liked what's her name,
Mary Seacole.
Yeah, that,
Seacole.
And it's fantastic that they chose her and not, I mean, the most famous nurse of the Crimean War is
Nightingale.
Florence Nightingale, right? And it's pretty cool that they chose the lesser known black woman over the better known white woman to be the Cassandra, which was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like focused too on her being a pioneer and everything that she kind of did, and how important it was too.
Yeah,
so yeah. I will agree. He does the historical things. Well, the only other thing I just wanted to really quick that you're mentioning, we're talking about the Centaurans like being tricked by her, though. I did like how they really played up also in this episode how stupid they are, because a lot of times, well, I mean, this is true of any show, though, to some extent, but it's like when the villains fall for it, for like what the hero does or whatever, not just like them hitting them in the back of the neck, which was also funny because he did that a few times. But just the idea, she's like, oh, we, you know, they'll fall for it. We'll just follow him, and he'll lead us right to it, you know, and he did every time. Although I did kind of wish there was a little bit more of that Centauran in her hospital, because that was Dan Starkey. I mean, I know it wasn't Strax, but it was totally, like, you know, Strax-like. So I appreciate that. But I was going to say, I also, as a little aside, did also think it was interesting how Chibnall, and I assume this isn't in the classics. Maybe it isn't. I don't know, because I haven't seen all the classics. But that, like, he gave a purpose to that little, like, hole in the back of their neck. That, like, this is the whole thing of how they get their air, and it's really, really important. And that's, like, their weakness, which is also how they knock them out every time with the frying pan. So,
well,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
I just wanted to.
But I also appreciate, I mean, the Centaurans have, for in recent years, been pretty much comic relief. And it was nice to see them, like, be a serious villain in the way that they were in, like,
mm-hmm.
previous Doctor Who's. Of, like, during like, recent Doctors, 12, 11, 10, whatever, like, the Centaurans have always been kind of a joke, right? Strax was really comic relief. And so it was good to, like, I kind of like seeing them be, even though we talked about how their costumes are different and whatever, but we talked about that last week, but I enjoyed, it was nice to make them like they were a little bit of a serious
villain.
They
were formidable.
Like,
they were more formidable.
Yes. Good choice of words. Yeah. So there was that. It was, to me, the better part of the episode.
I'm sorry. That I still think
what?
Is hilarious, them riding a horse. I mean, it's just funny.
I mean,
you mentioned, he's like, I wanted to ride a horse. But yes, I agree with
what
you're
saying. It's
not Doctor
Who without a little bit of
without
a joking thing
of
now and then.
Yeah. Right,
you know,
right.
But then they also had, like, I appreciated the Doctor sort of quotes the Charge of the Light Brigade. You know that famous poem, you probably caught it, famous poem by Tennyson about the Charge of the Light Brigade happened during the Crimean War. And you might be familiar with the poem. The poem goes, "Into the Valley of Death rode the 600. And it's also, part of that poem goes, half a league. The Doctor said something about being half a league ahead. Like, they, like, I don't know. I like that part of it. You know, I like that nerdy kind of stuff. But it was the better part of the episode. I also like Mary Seacole as, like, she's sort of like a substitute companion in part of it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, while the companions are separated, she sort of steps in there. I like that. It was the better part of the episode. I don't like Dan. He's not winning my heart as companion just yet. And I thought it was utterly ridiculous that the Doctor was like, okay, Dan, you're on your own in the 21st century to, like, defeat the parents. And I'm like, wait,
was a little,
this guy, you met him 5 minutes ago. He's been in space for about 1 minute in the TARDIS. And now he's suddenly, like, the equal of Yaz, right? Like, he's going to be, like, I'm like, what? This guy's a Like, I didn't really...
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I feel him...
For him to be able to do it.
He's being shoved down my throat. In my opinion, I feel him being shoved down my throat a little too fast. Actually prefer Vinder, who knows if Vinder's going to become a companion or not, but the way he's being brought in a little more sensitively or slowly along there with him and Yaz, you know, working together, I like Vinder better. I feel Dan's being shoved down my throat. I feel Dan is kind of an idiot, and I don't really see justification.
I don't see any
justification for the doctor's faith in him or telling him any reason to believe that he'd be able to. Seriously, he's met the doctor for like an hour.
It was a little stretch too that he was like willing to risk his life and go after them and that, like, because he's like telling his parents, "You stay here. I'm used to these aliens. Now I'm going after." So, yeah, I totally see what you're saying. I think he's funny and I like his scenes with Carbonista, but he is kind of silly and not really that reliable. I definitely see that.
I like his scenes with Carbonista because I like Carbonista, not because I like Dan.
That's a good point. I
like Carbonista. That's why I like those scenes. I just don't, to me, Dan's being shoved down my throat a little too fast and at Yaz's expense.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. The only other thing I wanted to, and this isn't about him, I just did want to mention, I did like how they were also with the Sontarans. I meant to mention how they're having them, like, kind of change history, too. Like, how they, there was, like, no Russia, like, there was Suntar instead.
Well,
and, like, they sort of had, like, that little bit of a memory of Russia, but not exactly. Like, they didn't know why. So I like that they kind of put that in there.
Well, this has to do with the sort of intertwined storyline that the Suntarans really aren't, it seems like the main story, but they admitted that they just used the Flux as an opportunity to take over Earth, which they've always wanted to do. And it seems like maybe the Flux is the main thing, and the Suntarans used it, but they're not maybe going to be they're not the main thing, right? The Flux.
Right. Yeah, I think they're gone after this episode, which is kind of surprising. And I think maybe that's a little bit of the problem too. And we mentioned this last week, but I see even the preview they have Cybermen coming now. And it's like, okay, the Sontaran are done already. Like I said, it was mostly their storyline, but it was only, and I'm not saying it necessarily had to be more than one episode, but it's like they brought them in specifically for a tiny bit of time just to put the Sontarans in there. Like, I'm guessing they're going to do the same thing with the Weeping Angels and the same thing with the Cybermen. Like, maybe we don't need all that. I don't know. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm also frustrated at the appearance of the Weeping Angels and then them to sort of disappear, and also with Dai, right? But I think they make maybe a little sense, because like the Weeping Angels thing is to put you back in time for you to die in a different time period, right? Like they're a temporal villain. And so maybe
be tracking the energy, because they feed on energy, you know? So I was wondering if that has to do with the Flux and that brought them there, but they haven't really gotten into that yet. I'm just concerned that we also see Cybermen. And now it's like, are we going to see a Dalek next episode? Like, it's too much. I do want to know what happened to Dai, though. Like I said, I wondered if he was going to take her over. One thing, though, I wanted to mention, and this is just kind of an aside and has nothing to do with anything, but I was looking at the pictures from the episode, and I know that, like, I kind of, the design of especially Azor, I think it's neat and it's interesting, but it's a little weird because to me it looks a little too glittery, glamoury. But I noticed something when I was looking at that I thought was really interesting to me, because I'm a lot of times into, like, you know, the design and stuff. I know you aren't so much, but it must be based on a geode, because if you look at the top of her head, she has like a fissure in the top of her head. There's like a hole in there with like rocks going out. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. I like the design a lot more now when I saw that. That little thing, I'm like, I did not notice that until I was looking at the photos. And I thought that was kind of interesting. So
that's interesting. So to me, they're the worst part of the show. I hate Swarm and Azure right now. And I actually don't really like their look or their costume design. They look like some sort of like...
I said it looks too glittery, glamoury.
Too glittery 80s yeah. costume party to me. They're frustrating also. I mean, they're definitely like... Chibnall's definitely holding it back from us to find out like what their deal is. You know,
well, I would be, if it ends up like they're from the Earth or something, and that's why they went with like that geo design, then I think that could be more cool. But if it's just like to make it fancy and glittery, then yeah, it's a little,
yeah,
a little much.
And they're a little bit, you know, they're a little right now that sort of like all powerful, all knowing villain that is getting away with everything and doesn't seem to have a vulnerability, which I guess we'll find. I would really like to see Yaz and Vinder be the people who find the vulnerability and have a little victory there, because, I mean, you know, I have a soft spot for Yaz being, like, not treated right by these writers and would like to see her, like, have a win, particularly if she's going to go off the show maybe after the season. I don't, right?
Yeah,
I don't know.
They showed them, though, so I assume they're in more of the episode, even whatever he did to them.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen. So I do kind of like they have the little cliffhanger-y thing, like, again, where it was, like, right at the end, like, he snapped his fingers and then it ended. We get another snap.
Yeah.
But so I thought it was kind of interesting. I don't know why, and I have no idea why I even think this. I'm probably really, really far off base, but since I haven't seen it yet, I want to say it in case I'm right, because I have no clue. For whatever reason, when they were showing the clip, I kept thinking, like, I wonder if that guy that they're showing, like, kind of his suit sort of reminded me of Swarm. And I almost wonder if, like, that's, like, a human version of him or something. And we're going to find out that, like, he used to be human or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
For some reason, I thought that when I watched that preview. And I'm like, that would be maybe a little more interesting.
Yeah.
We'll see. I have no idea, honestly. So.
That's very interesting. Anyway, yeah, to me, a little bit of a disaster. Here's the other thing. We only have six, so to already be like a third of the way through and not really have any clue what the hell is going on or how any of this, like, I don't know. I'd like to know a little bit more about Swarm.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me not knowing. It depends on the payoff, if it's got a good payoff or not. I guess.
Well, we're gonna have to wrap this up in a minute. But Swarm clearly knows the Doctor from before. Like we have this whole thing now with the Doctor working for the Directorate, and then they reset his memory, her memory, and reset the Doctor as a child, and all this, right? And so, Swarm clearly. Like, I hope we're going to get more of the Doctor's, I don't know. I mean, so much has been retconned and could be retconned yet again. It's hard to even say how this is going to go, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I didn't love it, maybe because I liked it better than last week, because instead of, like, five separate things happening, we only had three separate things happening this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. As we're talking about it, I'm realizing that there's a lot more than I guess I really realized, you know, like thinking, well, they could have put that in a different episode. But maybe it's also because they only have six episodes. I mean, maybe they're trying to get a 10-episode story in six episodes. I don't know.
To do like an epic, like one season kind of a thing. And I mean, great, glad to see it. And I guess we'll see where it all goes.
So these six episodes are the last part of Chibnall and her, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And then
I'm wondering if there's a holiday episode. I don't know if there was also a holiday one, or this is one or what. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
Good question.
Hopefully we'll like the new Doctor.
Yeah.
Hopefully Davies will
kind
of write it around, but...
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay.
We'll find out. All right.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on. Do you want to do Fear?
Dead. Let's do Fear.
You want to do Fear the Walking Dead first? Yeah.
Yeah, let's do Fear the Walking Dead.
This episode is all with, as I talked to Mo
Sarah.
For this one, is all with Sarah and
Totemo Penguins, yeah.
Yeah, with Sarah and Josiah looking for Wendell. As a standalone episode, I kind of like this. I mean, it was, again, this isn't the best written show, but I think this was one of the better episodes. I enjoyed the tension of the episode. I thought it was a very, very sad episode. I was not happy about Rufus. I told her that. I was like, I did not like that kill Rufus. I was a little pissed off at that. But that's me. I'm always going to be mad if it kills dog. I don't know. I thought that scene, especially though, was sad. I don't know if I 100% buy that it completely changed their attitude towards killing each other.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was terrible.
Yeah, but the rest of it, like the search for Wendell, I appreciated. Again, Strand, there's so many more problems with Strand, even more so in the next one, which we'll get to next week. But like the I guess the bonding between the two of them, I liked kind of that part of it, I guess. Not that necessarily was, like, mythology-wise important, but...
All right. I'd like to say that I think Mo Collins did some very good work in this episode. That's what saved the, like, and I think Lenny James was great, and I think that guy who played Josiah, who also played his brother, what was the brother's name? I forget. But anyway, Emil. He's played the twins.
Dimitri. His name's Dimitri Rose. Played Josiah.
Okay. Thank you for knowing his name, which I didn't. I think the only thing that saves this show sometimes is some fine work by actors, because narratively, this was kind of another disaster, right? Like, this is another episode where people are roaming around Texas bumping into each other all the time. When are these people going to learn that you can't blab your location all over the radio all the time? Like, they blab, blab, blab on the radio, and it always happens that bad guys find them, right? They used to make videos of themselves and leave them in gas stations. Now they only talk on the radio.
You're not wrong.
And
you're not wrong.
How many times are characters going to crash over into a cliff or a ravine and not even get a broken nose? Like, they, right? Time,
yeah.
Like, nobody on the show can drop... Jamie, nobody can drive a car more than like 20 yards without getting in a crash on this show, right?
That's true, too. And they still
and
have
they
working cars
hurt.
Somehow, which is already a problem.
Yeah, and they
but,
never get hurt.
I just want to ask you something, though, that I was kind of a little, I don't know, maybe, again, maybe with the show, with the signs, you just need to go with it. But why is, and maybe I just don't understand, you know, how the nuclear stuff works, but why is the radiation from the not exploded nuclear warhead any different than the exploded radiation? Because I understand that, like, the Prussian blue or whatever fixes, I forget now what it was, whatever poison, I understand that that is supposed
cesium
to be like a
whatever.
Cure for that,
yeah.
But it's still radiation coming from the warhead. Why is it that this one they can just take pills and they're fine? And if that's the case, why didn't you give them to Morgan? That was my other big concern. Like, okay, you don't know this guy. Like, what about Morgan? He's been around the warheads. But I guess that one was different because it wasn't exploded, which is why it was lost. But I'm like, this is the script.
I don't know, Jamie. Why is it that Morgan can walk all over the state of Texas to all these places that are actually not that dangerous, and yet he continues to keep his wife and baby, or whatever Grace is, right, continues to keep them in a submarine in the middle of, like, the worst nuclear fallout, right? And last week, remember when they ran into those people who had the dead baby in the suitcase two weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
And those people were like, they're like, don't drive this way. The radiation's worse. You can't get out. And yet Morgan, like, can walk all over Texas in, like, a day to all these places that are not that bad, right? Like, and yet, like,
yeah.
It just makes no sense. It's just inexplicable, right? Like, the variations in danger and the fact that he can traverse it all in, like, no time. Why would anybody continue to live in a bad place, right? It just makes – and how is Morgan still alive? And how how is Rufus suddenly like some kind of cadaver dog that can find, I mean, it all just makes no sense, right? How does Rufus, we had an episode that the big tragedy is that the dog gets bitten by a severed walker head, which, okay, it's ridiculous, right? And it's sad, and
yeah.
I'm sorry that Rufus died, but we still haven't seen Alicia Debenham Carey. This is episode 4, and we haven't seen Alicia,
yep.
right? And
yeah.
And we have an episode that, it's kind of like, I mean, why doesn't she make her agent get her off this show?
Well, maybe she won't survive the end of the season. If she doesn't, I'm guessing that's why. But,
yeah.
You're right.
I'm
kind of over this anthology thing. I mean, this was supposedly mm-hmm. something that happened before COVID. And, if it was because of COVID, I could maybe forgive it. But the fact that now they don't really need to do it, and they're saying it was never for that in the first place, I know that we have characters separated, and they do that in all the shows, and we always complain, but there's one thing when they have, two groups. This is, every character is a separate group, a separate episode, and it's just too much. Enough of the people at once. But, yeah, I think what you said is completely right, though. The parts that I liked about this episode were sort of the character moments and the good acting. The writing, on the other hand, leaves a lot to be desired.
We were long overdue probably to learn more about Sarah. And Wendell, but here's the thing, is Wendell off the show? Because Wendell hasn't been in it for, we never even saw Wendell did we even see him once last season when they were all living in Jenny's ranches and whatever? We never saw him last year.
I assume he's not off the show, but you're right. I hadn't really thought about it until now.
We don't really know if Strand is lying, if Wendell's really inside there or not, right?
And I asked for that, too, because it's going, are we supposed to assume he's telling the truth? I mean, I think that you're supposed to assume it, I feel like, just because of the way this show is. But also the way it is, they can turn around and change it at the same time.
I don't know if that actor got a better job and he can't be on the show anymore or, what is going on.
Or they just don't want to pay him. We're not sure.
Right?
But it was nice to get more of her because we've had, nothing. And I feel like they've kind of done that to a lot of the characters, though. We get Morgan and Grace and not that they're not, good actors, good characters, but, it's at the expense of everybody else. We have not seen, although not that she's necessarily my favorite character, but we haven't seen anything with Luciana in forever. We know nothing about Charlie, pretty much. I forget how these people are even there because they don't show them for so long. And like you said, the best character of all, Alicia, hasn't been in for ever either, and that's a problem.
That we're looking at, that we're thinking, I mean, yeah. And let's not even get into the idea of so the nuclear bomb fell maybe 3 months ago and Strand already built a community that even has yoga and painting, right? Alicia built a community. She already got out of her cell, built a community and left to go form a different community someplace else, which we don't even know where she is. Right. And
no,
all
wait,
this
let's
stuff.
Say that again. Oh, Alicia.
Well, Alicia got out of her trap. She was locked in a cell. She becomes the leader of this community and leads them out of the bunker someplace else, and we don't even know where she is right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so we've seen at least, plus we've seen some other loosely organized, there's another group out there who, this guy who was taking zombies' clothes off and putting them in a truck and delivering them somewhere. And he, picks up the warhead. Who picks up a leaking, that whole bit with the leaking warhead is ridiculous also. Because there's an element here where this is not
a really long time.
I mean, the zombies really aren't even part of the show anymore. It's a post-nuclear show now, right? And the zombies aren't even, even really part of it in any meaningful way. And meanwhile, you know, I was reading someone today, maybe it was Eric Kane and Forbes, or maybe it was on Den of Geek, was saying, okay, so all these people have formed communities in like 5 minutes. Meanwhile, like on Walking Dead, the flagship show, they struggle and struggle and struggle to form any kind of community that isn't almost immediately torn apart by infighting or enemies or something else, right?
Uh-huh.
There are frustrating things, I mean, but again, yeah, I totally agree with you that the things that I liked about it were, like, the good acting, the character moments. I did enjoy learning a little bit more about how Sarah and Wendell became so closely bonded in the way that they, they call themselves brother and sister. We learned what that's really about. You know, we just learned, like, a lot more about them.
I was glad they didn't kill him. I kind of didn't think they would, I'll be honest, but I got to say that the scenes with him and, like, finding that wheelchair, like, though that was, like, really shocking and emotional and sad. And, I mean, obviously it wasn't him, but I think that was done really – was done well. Again, the acting, not necessarily the writing. But
Mo Collins was great.
Yeah.
I mean, Mo Collins, who's really – before this was known as a comedian, I think, was fantastic in this episode.
Yeah, you know what's so funny, though, that you say that, because I asked her about that, but this is the one thing I didn't know, I never would have known, but she said that when they, when she did the audition, that they basically told her to play, and I don't know if I've ever seen the whole movie, but her character, Gina, from 40-Year-Old Virgin, that's what they wanted this character to be based on. Yeah, so as much as, like, she's kind of this serious person, or it's a serious role at the same time, it's kind of got this is based on, like, a comedic character.
She
is known for comedy. I'm sorry?
Mm-hmm. I mean, her character has some, you know, she has some comedic one-liners sometimes on the show. Her character has not always been a wholly serious character, but, I mean, I thought she was great.
I do.
And we are kind of overdue for an episode to see her in action and see what she can do. That was great. But
I agree.
What are you doing, people who write this show? Like, when are they going to get fired?
They're making a lot of money. That's what matters.
They're making less money all the time. But
but they're still making a lot. I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes I feel, though, like, which is not a good thing that I'm thinking this, but sometimes I feel like sometimes The World Beyond, the story's a little more cohesive. The acting on Fear is better.
Yeah.
But the story on World Beyond is better a lot. The writing has been somewhat better. I'm not saying it's a perfectly written show. I mean, it's still Walking Dead. But, I think out of the two... It's
well, and so maybe let's talk about that show.
Yeah.
Which is our next show that's up.
Yeah, now this is the one where they steal the vial, right? I want to make sure I have the right episode before I start.
Yes.
The talk.
This is the episode where Huck and what's his name? Not Will. The other guy. Huck and
Leo Percy. I'm not sure which one he's.
Nico Tort, the guy who
Nico.
Nico Tortorella.
Felix. Felix. Yeah, where he and Huck. Yeah, there were some good things in this episode. I liked Huck working together and him having to trust her. I liked that storyline. I don't know that I buy that they could have gotten away with what they did. There's kind of like no way that any of that would have worked. But I liked them having to trust each other again. I liked the fact that Percy kind of – oh, wait, that's – I don't want to – I'm trying to think. Is that in this episode? Sometimes I get the episodes mixed up.
No, there was little Percy.
I think that might not be this one. I watched one on AMC Plus. So we won't get in that. I liked the part with Huck and Felix. I liked some of the conversations with – Why her name's not Lila. I want to call her. Is her name Lila? Yeah, Lila, that is
the girlfriend.
Name.
The girlfriend, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of liked some of the conversations at dinner and kind of like that Iris, I mean, Iris kind of would have maybe not said some of the things she said, but that she isn't as accepting. I kind of like some of the sisters kind of with the opposite viewpoint of that. But yeah, I mean, there's some good things with it. I like that we got to see more of Jadis because I've been wanting the crossover element. So I thought that was cool. I guess I shouldn't have been shocked by the ending when Indira's son gets killed at the very, very end. I thought he was going to kill Will. I don't know. I thought like he was going to like betray him or something at the last second, and then he got shot. And I guess I should have seen it coming, but I didn't. Obviously, that's going to probably, once she finds out, start more of a war. I think the other thing is that right now, Iris is maybe going to start a war just because of her telling the other group not being on the same page as everybody, you know, and being like, we're going to burn this place down, and everybody didn't necessarily know that she was doing that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I also like that we got some, it's just get to what we saw, you know, last week we thought the father was going to go to Lila and tell her and blow it for them. And in this episode, we got some backstory on her. And how is this where she takes him to the bench and she says, listen, my husband got bit, my daughter got bit, I experimented on them, blah,
week.
All that. Oh,
no,
sorry.
I think that's the next week. No, it's okay.
I haven't seen the next week, have
I? I don't know. I thought you watched it today, so I don't know. I don't think you know if you watched
it. No, I did not want. Is this the episode where the father says I have to talk?
I think that's the next episode. I think this one's just them at dinner and them stealing the vial while they're at dinner. I think.
Well, I mean,
anyway,
while they're at dinner
people, you know,
and hucking them, yeah, and they go into the, I think the father says I have to go talk to her. So you think in the next week's episode we see that talk. So I don't want to.
Yeah,
then I shouldn't talk about what they talk about. Okay,
sorry.
I won't talk about what they
talk
about.
The fact that they talk is not really a spoiler. They have a conversation. That's not really. But yeah, this is the one where they're actually stealing the vial and where she's at dinner and doesn't know what's going on. And, you know, something's going to go wrong and that shit's going to hit the fan. I mean, by the end of the episode, you know that. And then on the other hand, this happens with Indira's son, I forget his name, being killed.
He's shot at the end,
I think, and I also, by the way, talked to the actress who plays Indira, but that won't go up for a while. But I think, it's my opinion, that probably that guy that didn't agree with her, that he probably told CRM, and that's why they came in with guns,
yeah.
Because they had to shoot him. That's my guess.
He was
I honestly don't know,
deputy, and he opposed Indira and was like, I don't think that we should let
him be like,
here.
Yeah, he's like, we're
going
to have to have a vote of no confidence.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's why, because that's why I was surprised, because I'm like, why did they come in? They weren't fighting. But if he went and told them, because he wanted to say, hey, these people are here. We need to turn them in or whatever. So he's trying to make himself look good, I'm guessing. So... either way, if what Iris has not done already does not spark something, I think that that's definitely going to once she finds out. If she wasn't already like, let's fight with them. So,
yeah. Particularly last year, I thought this show was terrible. I like it a lot better now. I think the pacing is much better on this show because it's a two-season show. And it's really, I said this last week, I'm going to say it again, this feels like a show that's moving towards a climax, finally, right?
Which it is.
And which it is, because it only has, I think, four more episodes. I don't know how many more episodes are left. Six more episodes? I'm not really sure.
This was episode six. I want to say there's 10, I think.
So there's four left, yeah. But I think the pacing is greatly improved on the show over the other two because mm-hmm. there's an end date, right? And they're, mm-hmm. they're moving in towards something. And I just am really, like, I think that's part of what's making the story just feel, I don't know, story moves better, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, I agree.
And we're getting somewhere with it.
I think that's part of the problem with the other shows is that they're going on forever and they don't have an end. And I mean, you know, he never really per se wrote. I mean, there's an ending to the comic book, but like, it's not per se resolved. Like the zombie apocalypse, he never wrote like an ending to, so it can just kind of
right.
go on forever. And I think that they're working towards something. I definitely think helps script wise.
Yeah.
And like I said, I like that it ties into, I like how the stories are tying together with the CRM and everything. And I mean, we have some of it in Fear as well, not a whole lot, but we have a little bit of it. So yeah, maybe if they decided on a wrap for the shows, they would do better. I don't know. I mean, the episodes we have coming up for the regular show are like the end, so maybe they'll be more the same of that, because they'll be going towards an end too. I don't know, and I have no idea what they're doing with Fear. All I know is there's another series coming. That's all I know.
I know.
It's like all separate things. Although, to be fair, if that show is like completely anthology episodes of like different characters, pieces, future, past, whatever, I think that show could potentially be good if they get good writers, because of the fact it's not, it's like bits and won't be drawn out like these, like the other shows have been. So
yeah,
it might even be a better show. I don't know. It really depends. But then again, we also have Daryl and Carol's show. And I still, as much as Daryl and Carol are my favorites, I still don't really see why they're like, we're ending The Walking Dead. Oh, but we're starting another show with the same characters. Like, it's not really a spinoff. It's the same show. Just kill the rest of them.
Yeah,
I,
the
I,
only
if
two
you really
OGs.
Want to do that, why not just have them go off on their own and continue it as The Walking Dead? It doesn't have to be a spinoff. Unless they're afraid people will be mad because they cut out too many people. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know. Quickly, before we wrap this up, and we should, Jadis. So Jadis is in this episode, which you mentioned. But we should
mm-hmm.
talk a little bit about Jadis, because she Jadis actually says something like 6 years ago when I joined. Like, she sets the timeline, which we've talked
yeah,
a lot
that
about.
Was what
like,
I was, yeah. That right? was what
you
when were gonna, you were we were talking about that. I'm like, you might know more about that after you watch it. Yeah. She says,
yeah.
you know, I came then, I gave them something that was valuable, which we're to assume, granted, this could all be not true, but we're to assume is Rick.
Right.
So she left then, and she, although I question that she went from somebody that they found there to so high in the military, if she wasn't already part of the military, but I guess they're low on people, so I don't know. I mean, she worked her way up.
She seems to be, to outrank Huck, she seems to be above Huck. Granted, Huck got busted for, you know, I mean,
yeah,
Huck
military.
Also, I mean, their conversation was so illuminating because she talks about, as you said, I gave them something they wanted, which we assume is Rick, and I got in. And she talks about how she formed a community and formed wrong alliances, which we know was with the Saviors and whatever. I mean, that was all kind of interesting.
Yeah, and how she got
and
the,
then
they got killed.
Huck,
he formed the wrong alliance.
Huck, is this one Huck talks about why she and Dennis were demoted?
No.
Right?
That's no, I don't
episode.
Think so. I think that's in the next
that's
one,
the next
yeah.
Episode,
well, some of that
I've
might
seen.
Have been she talked to Felix, might have been. I'm not entirely sure. But because the part with her him finding out she was married, that's in this one, I think. But
well,
yeah, some of that.
Well, she talks about,
I think what
like,
you're talking about,
something.
I think, is in this one, but I'm not 100% sure.
I'm not even really
but,
sure what he did, and she covered up for him, which we already knew. But that caused her to
yeah.
be disciplined. I mean, we definitely.
But
Jadis
we know that
was
Jadis looked up to her because she's like, "You were my." Oh, I forget the wording she uses, but she had looked up to Huck, because Huck at least at one point was above her, even if maybe, and I don't know it's necessarily, I feel like they're sort of on a different track, though, too, because she's pure on the soldier side, you know, so there's a little bit of a, not that Huck isn't a soldier, but.
She's a soldier. She's absolutely a soldier.
Yeah,
but,
she's a soldier.
But so,
yeah,
so quickly. So quickly, Jadis mentions, I mean, I don't know if she said this week or last week, that she was brought in by General Beale to do an investigation into incompetence and other kinds of insubordination or whatever, right?
I'm reading all these things on Reddit that people think that's Rick. That doesn't even make sense. I don't understand these theories that people have that Rick somehow, she brought him in and he, like, became this high-ranking official. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But, you know, people
that
can have their theories, whatever. It makes no sense.
But they keep mentioning Beale,
who's obviously going to be important.
But it is someone who's higher than Kublik. It's someone who's higher than Elizabeth.
Yes.
Who Jadis reports to, right? And they only have 4 episodes left. So how this is all going to play out is beyond me. But it might not, because this General Beale could just be the big bad for the Rick movies if they ever get filmed.
That's also possible. Yeah. Yeah,
right.
that's the other thing too. This has only 2 seasons, but we don't know for sure if it's going to have an actual end or it's going to continue.
I don't think it will. This is supposed to be a prequel to the movies, I think.
Yeah, I think like the storyline with the kids and that will probably be wrapped up, but I think that there's going to be like more, which I guess we'll find out. But anyway, I think the stuff with her was interesting, and her being like, oh, it was all theatrics and all this, and kind of just like a little bit of a peek into what she did, I thought was interesting. And I liked it because it did give us a timeline definite, which I'm always so confused with that. But anyway, the interview with Paul Dana is up too, if people want to read more about Jadis. And I did ask her about how the CRM found her and everything, and people can read that.
Not that she gave
any outright spoilers or anything. I mean, she did not. She would not tell me what A and B meant, even though I had to ask her. I'm like, I know you're not going to tell me, but I have to ask you anyway, because you have to try, right?
Gotta ask.
Anyway, that's up. And then we should probably mention that For Fear, you're going to be talking to Christine Evangelista, who plays Sherry. And tomorrow I'm also talking to Joe Holt, who plays Leo, and Natalie Gold, who plays Lila on World Beyond. And those will be up after the episodes air, so people can send questions and look forward to that. All right. Well,
great.
I think that's about it for those episodes, unless you have more to add. I just think it's very obvious that the shit's going to hit the fan in the next episode. Whether you've seen it or not, you know that something bad is coming.
Well, there's only 4 episodes left. It's got to happen.
Assume somebody's gonna get caught. Yeah, that's it. And they're going to try to set the place on fire, as Ira says. That's coming, too. I mean, that may not be literal, idea, but, you know, that's going to come. All right. Well, I think that's it for that. Is there any shows? What else do we have? Lock and Key?
Sure. We'll bring AJ in to talk about Lock and Key with us.
Sounds good.
If he's listening. I'm sure he's listening. He's always listening.
He might have fallen asleep. Who knows now? Okay.
That should be the next thing maybe that we talk about.
We've
all watched the entire season, so we're just going to review the whole. It's been out for a couple weeks now. We'll just review the whole season of Lock and Key.
Yeah, so if you don't want to hear it all, maybe disconnect for a little bit. And I just put up tonight. I wish these things would have gone sooner. Everything's kind of behind because of my head. But I just put up Griffin Gluck and Halea Jones, who play the two demons, Gabe and help me out. What's
Eden?
Her name?
Eden. Eden.
Yeah, Eden, yes. So I just put that up tonight. So that's there, too, if people want to read and watch that.
Great.
All right. I'm walking while I'm talking. I'm talking.
All right. So, AJ, are you there? All right. He muted himself for a minute. So while we wait for AJ to come back,
Here I is.
I was trying to think of, oh, there he is.
Good.
Okay.
After, I always like after AJ's quiet for so long to give him first shot to talk, you know?
No, yeah, definitely.
What are we talking
so,
about?
Yep, AJ, so why don't you tell us what you think about
Lock and
Key?
How much of it are we talking about? Because I've seen the whole thing.
Well, we think we should.
Yeah,
we've all seen the whole season, and it's been out a couple weeks, so we think it's okay to talk about the whole thing.
Yep.
So
why don't you tell us
overall
what you think?
Idea.
And I got to get something, so I'm going to mute myself for a minute while he talks. I got to find the mute button.
So, I liked it, and one of the true staples of a good show is when you're annoyed the whole time. But it was
song,
a good annoyed.
All right.
It was a good annoyed though. You know, like, you know, to have a good story, you know that your heroes have to go through some shit before they can overtake the evil. And it was just really frustrating how they kept losing every, you know, like they would take one step forward and two steps back, like every episode, and it was driving me crazy. But
yeah.
I knew by the 10th episode, I'd be happy, except for one thing. I was really, until the credits rolled, even after the credits rolled, I kept hoping for Jackie to pop up somewhere. I was very upset about Jackie.
Oh,
I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
I was very pissed off about that key.
And, you know, a lot of people had problems. You talk about things going wrong. A lot of people had, and I don't know, I mean, he's still a teenager, and teens do reckless, stupid things. It was kind of dumb that he automatically used it on her without testing it on anything else. I agree with that, but I kind of get it. I mean, you loved her, and he's a teenager. He does stupid things. I can buy it, I guess. But, yeah, I agree. I was a little upset with that, too.
I mean, I was a little annoyed with that, but Duncan did say you have to be very careful about your intention and think about what you want. And so they never really delved into it that much, but I could see how, you know, how Tyler wanted to make a key that would remove the demon and maybe, I mean, this is a trick we see in a lot of things about magic, a lot of shows about magic, that if you're not really, really careful about your intention, you know, like a be careful what you wish for kind of thing. Like he made a key that would remove the demon, but maybe wasn't careful to be intentional that it would not harm the, right? I mean,
of course,
it kind of wasn't
surprising.
It was funny
sad.
Though, because like I kept saying the whole time, I'm like, it takes time, you know, for her to wake back up. She's going to be sitting in the morgue, and she's going to, like, pop up, and everybody's going to be like, holy shit. But it never happened. Even at the end of the episode, I said to Artie, I was like, is there a post-credit scene? Because we need Jackie to come back.
You're funny. Yeah, no. And that's the other thing, too. You have to assume that probably, I'm assuming that Tyler is going to end up finding out again. I know he's like, I don't want to know about magic, but I can't see that sticking because I just don't see that sticking.
Well, there's a season 3, so he kind of has to.
Well, I mean, he could leave the show, but I'll tell you that I saw an interview with Connor Jessup where he said, all he said about next season, they've already filmed that, you know, the third season's mm-hmm. already done. They started filming it immediately after season 2 and
they're
done filming. And in an interview, Connor Jessup said, he said, Tyler might find out that leaving and forgetting is not as easy as you might think. Because, like, we've seen that people forget magic, but these guys are locked. Like, everybody we've seen forget magic is not a lock. Tyler Jessup
That's
didn't
not true.
Say, Tyler, Connor Jessup didn't say that. Oh, Rendell. Rendell forgot magic, right?
No, Duncan. Duncan's
a
lock.
Duncan
well,
forgot magic because
they
made a key to extract his memories. Duncan forgot magic.
Well, yeah, they took
his friends took his memories
away. Yeah, but even when they gave him his memories... When they gave his memories back, he was still having issues until they used the memory key on him.
Right,
yeah.
And that's what I wanted to ask you guys about. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
I just there's one thing I'm not, and maybe it's because I haven't read the comics. I don't know. Maybe you guys are a little more clear. But
no, I haven't read
the
comics.
Okay, so they made the memory key or whatever it's called, the memory key. It's my understanding that, and maybe that's where I'm getting confused, is they made the key that enabled them to know as adults. That was the point of the memory key. So why did they, remove his memory? Like, what was the reason to remove his memories? Was it so they wouldn't know how to make a key again? That part was a little confusing to me, is why they took out his memory. How that was,
they removed
like,
his,
if they needed to.
They removed his memories because he saw Rendell kill Lucas.
So they didn't want
him
to remember that.
Why couldn't?
Because he didn't realize, because the whole thing, like, Lucas becoming Dodge, becoming an Echo, wasn't known to Duncan. And it, to Duncan, it looked like Rendell just murdered his friend. Like, Duncan Duncan didn't understand the whole evil part of it.
I guess my question is, why didn't they just explain it to him? Like, why did they have to take his memory? I thought that since he was the one that took, that made the key, they took his memory so nobody else could create a key. That was what I thought it was supposed to be, but I wasn't sure. That was why I was.
Now they explained all. They explained it all in season one. He was even still. Lucas was still very distraught. Duncan was still very distraught over it, and they decided to take his memories to help him deal with it because he just couldn't get over it. Because he kept making the argument, it's still Lucas. You know, even though a demon entered Lucas and everything, it was still like,
All right.
So that was what they decided.
All right.
Oh, crap. I plugged in my phone cord, and I plugged the wrong phone cord in.
So overall feelings about this season, I felt like the first half was a little bit less clear to me. The second half of the season, for me, worked better when the story started to really roll. I felt like the historical flashbacks really did not work for me at all. They felt really unnecessary and not part of anything, and it's only in the last 5 minutes of the whole season where any of that, where they, and I knew, okay, they're setting it up, but it really felt like something that took up too much time and dragged the story down and maybe could have been consolidated into one better flashback in one episode. I also felt like Josh, the descendant, who's the teacher at the school who hooks up with the mother, I felt like that story, that he was a complete waste of time that didn't have to happen at all. I didn't need him as an entry to the flashbacks.
Expecting more from
Josh.
That's
why a lot of that is in there. I mean, not that character. I mean, the part about, like, the colonial, the backstory of the keys and everything and Key House, that, it's my understanding, is from the comics. But that's why that whole storyline is going to be a big part of it in season three. But, yeah, I mean, we only needed to know about the Whispering Iron. I don't know that we needed quite as much as we thought. I would agree with you.
Well, I guess, they want to set up Gideon as the bad guy for the next season, but I felt like it really would be labored too much and distracted too much from what was really going on.
I actually like the way they did it because it was snippets here and there. Because I feel if they had spent like an entire episode on the backstory, that would have, I think, would have taken away. Right? Because then, because I mean, we've had a lot of shows where they've done that, where like you have an entire episode that has nothing to do with what's currently going on. Then you go to the next episode, which goes back to the story, and it's like, oh, wait, what happened in the other episode, So I kind of like the way they did that.
I think it wouldn't have needed an entire episode. I think they spent way too much time on it, period, and it could have been done in 7 minutes probably. That it was just, to me, there was too much of it. And, I mean, they definitely didn't save any of it to set up season one. For some reason, they put all of the season three exposition into season two, right? Some of that could have, for whatever reason, they decided not to start season two with it.
Of course,
to me,
they,
it was...
Go ahead, finish your thought.
Well, to me, it was just too much, and it was like time away from the main storyline without any real payoff within this season until the very end, and it also bothered me because the more I watched the season, the more I thought that Eden is my favorite character.
Me too.
I love Eden. I love
Eden. Yeah, Eden.
Yeah.
Who really, you know, she was an antagonist last season, but not really, I mean, nowhere near the role she had. That I loved her. She was a far more compelling demon than Gabe. Gabe was such a, I never could really understand why Kinsey was dating him in the first place. Like,
yeah,
he's such a dud and not that interesting a guy. And manipulative and so obviously manipulative and abusive that she didn't, like, somebody like Kinsey should really catch on to. Gabe is just not a, and I also didn't really, this bit where Gabe is falling in love with Kinsey and wants her to be by your side and choose me, which is,
yeah,
kind
I
of like,
a little bit with that.
That was not the best narrative choice, maybe. I don't know if that's from the comic book. I feel like that's something I've seen before, but remembering that Gabe is really Dodge, it's really hard for me to believe it coming from Dodge.
Yeah.
I could maybe believe it from Lucas, but it's really hard for me to believe that Dodge has these feelings for Kinsey.
Yeah. Maybe if they had even used a different demon, but I have no idea if that's from the comic or not. I want to ask you guys something, though, because I did see something on Reddit. I'm like, nobody even didn't even notice that. How does talk about Eden. That one kid, I don't know the kid's name, but she throws the kid in the desert. How does she throw him in the desert without there being a door there?
She had a key, and she opened a door. We saw her take the key out of the door.
I know, but they're supposed to only be able to find places that are connected by a door. And I know it was just, like, for cinematic effect and everything, but there wouldn't have been a door in the middle of the desert. Because I was reading people
and
complaining about the door.
Like,
hey, you're right.
Well, we don't know
there
that it was.
Been, yes, there
we don't.
Been, but.
We don't know that it was the middle of the desert. I mean, that could have been Arizona. That could have been somebody, you know, somebody's backyard in Arizona, for all we know.
True.
It has to be.
I don't know. I just
it has to be
funny.
A door that
it didn't really bother me. I just was reading it and I'm like, hey, you're right.
Yeah.
one of those epic moments.
So what I was, it's funny when the season first started and I saw Kevin, I recognized Kevin Durant immediately. I was you know. I was like, he's gonna. I was like, you don't just get Kevin Durant for a bit part, and then you know we find out he's gonna be the big bad in season three. One thing I agree with you, Karen, with the backstory is we got the you know the first episode we get the flashback, and then later when we get the more of it, we get that entire scene again. Like we didn't need the whole scene again. That was a good waste of five minutes. Like, we didn't need the whole scene. They could have done, you know, like, I've seen other shows where, like, you know, they do the whole, you know, they do that scene, and then they're, like, 3 hours earlier. And then when you get to that point, they jump around. They don't redo the whole scene. So I feel like I agree there. That made it seem longer because we'd already seen that entire thing. We didn't need to see it again. You know. I mean, I did like the flashbacks because it was kind of like a quick origin story for everything. So we understand, you know, where everything started and how the door, you know, got there and everything, whatnot. But yeah, back to Eden. I really hope she's not dead. Like, I know he dropped her down the well, but I'm just really hoping that she's just hurt and not dead because if Eden's not in season three, I'm going to be really pissed off because Eden was great.
Well,
like
me too. And
she was a lot
of
fun.
He didn't just drop her down the well. Presumably the key is down the well with her, right? Like the echo key, she had the echo key and presumably he threw her and the key down the well. So how does she get out if no one can find the key to release her, right? Unless she finds a way to use it down there. She was so fantastic. She was such a, as I said, a much more interesting villain than Gabe. And we also got a little bit of her, like, poor little rich girl backstory.
Yeah, meeting her mom.
Right? and kind of explaining why she was such really a horrible person to begin with, even before she got turned into a demon. And I was kind of intrigued by her bit about, like, Gabe, you're going to be sorry for always underestimating me. Like, I like the idea that Eden is not, that she is underestimated, that she's not just a dumb little rich girl that he's using,
right.
But that she really, like, I like her a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
And she's a good villain, I think. I also think that young lady who I looked up her name and I forget it, Halea
Jones
Jackson. I think she's a good actress. I think she really is perfectly cast for playing Eden. She's so good as Eden. Like Eden's dialogue is so believable to me. It's written like a horrible teenage girl, and it's played like a horrible teenage girl. I think she's really, really, I really enjoyed that actress in that role.
Yeah, she was definitely the unexpected highlight of the show.
Yeah. And you know, she was good in a season that, so this season was much darker than previous seasons, right? Than the previous season. And I did in the first half, I missed a little bit of that. The first season was a little bit more of this sort of like the wonder of magic. Where remember early on, they like every episode they found a new key and they learned about the new key. And it was sort of like, you know, we didn't really have that. They did find a couple new keys, but in general, like this took on a darker tone. And we had kind of moved past, like, the discovering of the keys and more, like, the power of the keys. Hey, I was surprised when, who was the lady that came out of her catatonic state? Erin, is that her name?
Erin, yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised when she died. Partly because...
Yeah, I was too.
Filling this really interesting role of an adult who had some knowledge of the past. I mean, basically, I guess they didn't need her anymore if Duncan was going to get his memories back. But she was like, had this interesting role of someone who knew what was going on and could kind of help the kids. And I liked her and sympathized with her. And it was kind of a shitty ending for someone who'd you know, been through so much. I was kind of surprised at that. But I guess I just explained it myself. Like once you get Duncan's memory back, do you need her anymore?
Yeah, and they brought Ellie back, too.
When they brought Ellie back. I wonder if she'll still be on the show, but...
I could see her and Rufus just staying in Nebraska and being done with the whole thing.
Yeah, that's too. I thought about. That's probably why she sort of has the same purpose as Erin too. It's not the same purpose, but I mean the same. Like from a story point of view, she's the adult that knows.
Yeah.
We don't need all three of them.
I got to say though, speaking of Erin, I thought that was I brilliant. Like. I hadn't really thought about why she was catatonic. Like, I always just assumed it was the horrors of their youth and everything. But to find out that she got stuck inside her own head for all those years, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's going to be, though, that's, like, really heartbreaking, though. I mean, and that happens to people, like, have been in, you know, like, a coma for years and years or whatever. I mean, not usually to that extent. I'm thinking of, like, Dead Zone or something.
Well,
but, I mean, that's, like, really heartbreaking that, like, she was stuck so long that she wakes up and, like, she's this older woman. And, like, she lost her whole life.
Yeah.
Well, and that if anybody had found the key, they could have let her out, right? Like, it was.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, but think about it. They had
the
key the whole time. And the only...
memory.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason they went in there in the first place was because they were looking for something else, and they just found her, you know what I mean? So it wasn't even like they were like, hey, maybe the key fell out of her head, and, you know, like nobody even thought of that, and I didn't think of it until it happened.
Right.
So I was like, that's what I thought it was done so well.
Nope.
Yeah.
Well, and there was that part where they open her school locker, and Tyler says, wow, she never moved on from Dad, and Kimmy says, yeah, because she's been trapped in here since she was 15. Right? Like, he was still her boyfriend.
Yeah.
I liked her. I was sorry to see her go, but I get it story-wise. You don't need her if you have these other people.
Yeah.
And presumably maybe Lucas could still be around in some way, right? Lucas is now released
from,
I mean, it's still an Echo, but whatever. So Lucas could still be around, so you don't really need all of them. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, you know what I thought was really cool? The whole scene at that house on the cliff, that was like some really great effects.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was, yeah. Oh, that was my favorite.
That was like, that thing had to cost a lot of money, but it was really cool, I thought.
I loved all that. Like when Kinsey jumped off the ledge and then busted out the wings, that whole shit was awesome.
Yeah,
I was loving Kinsey.
Yeah, totally
loving Kinsey with the wings.
And you figured it out, but it was
well,
yeah.
Yeah. It was,
and like,
yeah.
And
I mean,
it
was very obvious,
too.
But it was awesome.
Yeah. And well, and good CGI, I thought, like pretty decently done.
Yeah, it really was.
Like wings are hard to do, right? Wings look really bad sometimes.
Funny. They never gave a name for the key, so I for the wing key, and I said to Artie, I was like, it's got to be the Icarus key. I mean, you got the Hercules key. This has got to be the Icarus key.
Yeah. Right, sticking with the whole Greek
thing. It might have
thing.
A name in the comics. I have no clue. I would like to read the comics.
Well, I'm pretty sure I read that there are more keys in the TV show than there are in the comics, I think.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
I read
well,
that, too.
The main storyline, I think, is, like, the first two seasons. Like, this is the, you know, going into the stuff that's, like, the history of Key House. But I think the rest of it's kind of going to be a new story, I think. But there are other Lock and Key comics, too, that they've added on. Like, I'm talking, like, the main storyline, I think. Although it happened very differently in the comics. I think, like, this is probably, I think that part of the story is kind of wrapped up, maybe. So I don't know. I know the comics
are a lot darker than
this show. I do like that this season was dark. I like the dark version better than the young adult version. I think it could even go darker. I get that they're not going darker, but I kind of like at least that they went a little bit. I agree with you on that.
Well, I mean, for a show that, you know, stars kids.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it was originally a pilot
grow.
A totally different show that, like, didn't get picked up. And then Netflix did it years later because there was apparently, like, a Fox pilot that was, like, a dark.
Yeah, the original pilot, which had a completely different cast. Actually, the woman that played,
I think Dodge, wasn't she?
Dodge was played by, what's-her-face from Lost Girl. Kenzie.
Oh, the woman
who,
Kenesia Kasani Solo.
Yeah, she was Dodge. She was playing Dodge in the original pilot. Yeah, and then it didn't get picked up, and the entire cast got recast.
Well,
speaking of a show of kids
to a wider audience, I think this type.
Do you think that season three they'll finally stop and listen when Bodhi speaks? That poor kid, man. Bodhi has always got it figured out. And nobody wants to listen to him. Even after everything they've been through, they're still like, Bodhi, go play in your room. Like,
sure.
Come on, man. Poor kid.
Yeah, this is true.
I know. There's an episode where he's like found a new key or he figured something out. And Kinsey's like in the bathroom being all depressed. And she's like, I need a minute. And he's like, no, but really. And she's like, come on, I need a minute. No one ever listens to that kid. Especially like,
I'm glad that Bodhi has Jamie now, though, at least.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a nice
yes.
character name, too, right?
You always love a character name.
I'm sorry,
Jamie.
My name is definitely shows. I get happy when they put my name in it.
I mean, I think Jamie, I don't know if Jamie's in the comic book, but I kind of understood why they added her when we saw Rufus. And the character who played, I mean, the actor who plays Rufus has grown about 7 inches taller since the last time we saw him.
Yeah.
And he looks like a grown adult.
Tall.
He was already tall.
Yeah.
He looks like a grown man. and is not an appropriate playmate for like an 8-year-old child any longer, right? I mean, I know he's a character
really
who has.
About it that way, but you're right.
I know he's a character
yeah,
who has a different. He's a character with a different way of, you know, he's neurodiverse or whatever. But still, he's like a huge man now, that actor. And so Jamie, also he lives in Nebraska, which makes Jamie also a more appropriate playmate because she's nearby.
Well, unless he has the anywhere key, then it doesn't really matter. But yes.
I know, but
you're
I just
right.
think, like, Rufus and his mom, maybe.
And by the way,
anyway,
the idea of that spider is horrifying. That's all I was thinking. I keep thinking of the
that
house.
That spider
That's
was
the
awesome.
The idea to me of that spider is so freaking horrifying. Like, I know it wasn't
actually,
made
that
to be
awesome.
So scary, but the idea to me is horrifying, is what I'm saying.
Actually, I kept thinking the spider was dumb because the spider was completely out of scale from what he should be, because even if the spider was inside the dollhouse, it wouldn't be so gigantic that it's bigger than, like, the kitchen table. I was like, let me see. If that spider was inside the dollhouse, it would still be kind of small, right? And I was, like, having some spider issues there. But it was
no,
so
that
well
spider was
deep.
That spider was a deep.
Spent some...
That was a spider. It might have been a little too big, but it was definitely larger than the furniture in the dollhouse. That was a pretty big spider to begin with.
I guess. I mean, I appreciate they spent some money on their CGI spider, at least.
If they made it a little spider, though, that was, like, smaller than that, it wouldn't have been scary, though, either. Like,
I get it. I get it. It was just, like, maybe they
no,
should have
I
had
know.
Jamie had a pet
know.
Tarantula that got loose or something. But I get
you
it.
Actually,
yeah, that
maybe
would have fit a little better.
It was so funny. You know, I love the whole, you know, the way Jamie could interact, you know, because Jamie was with the dollhouse and could interact and everything. And the scene, you know, when the scene when they were setting up Eden and what's his face there?
With the glass, you mean?
Oh, Josh. Dodge.
No, Dodge.
Gabe.
Gabe, thank you. When they were setting them up and everything, and I was like, is somebody gonna call Jamie? I was like, they need to call, and then he just yells, now Jamie, and I was like, oh, son of a bitch, they already had it planned.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
like,
the smartest person in the family.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah.
And speaking of smart Bodhi, I was so happy at the end when he took Nina into her head, and then and then he said, and then he tells her, we don't actually see it, but he tells her he won't let her forget, which means he's going to give Mom the memory key finally. Because poor Nina, that whole show, Nina's always like, what is going on here? Like she had to think she was losing her fucking mind.
This is true.
Yes, and it makes good sense because it's narratively it's not sustainable. I mean, maybe in a comic book that's sustainable,
no.
But in a TV show it's not sustainable for their mother to not know
well,
what's going
in the
on
comic
and,
book,
and to keep going.
Well, because you know what,
I could be wrong, but she's like I think still like a drunk in the comic book from what I got out of what I was hearing about it because they changed the character in that respect. I think.
All right.
So she's probably not as
well.
Good
I mean,
mother,
like,
so it wouldn't matter as much.
Season one,
yes,
it worked. Season two, it got to be annoying, you know, to the point where, like, she thought, you know, she, poor woman thinks she's going crazy. You know, she's sitting in the AA meeting talking about how she feels so distant from her kids, you know, everything. She always feels like she's missing something and, you know, and she's not a dumb person. She's like, you know, you can't tell me that, you know, Ellie's missing and this is happening and this is happening and nobody seems to care but me, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, so if you try and do that again for in a third season, it just, I think it would have ruined it and it wouldn't have worked. So I'm glad they made the decision to finally bring poor Nina into the fold.
Yeah. It, like what happens in comics doesn't always work on television. And they needed to bring her in. Yeah. So that'll be, that'll work better. That was nice to see. So, and then they won't have to, like, have all these, like, random adults that maybe they trust or don't trust or whatever, and, So, I thought it was overall pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it was good. So.
Yeah.
All right, you guys want to move on to the 4,400?
Yeah, unless Jamie, you guess when you want to add?
Oh, no, wait, yeah, I did see it. I watched it I'm like, I didn't watch it. Wait, I did watch it. I'm just losing my
mind.
Did
brain, you watch both
all.
Of them?
No, yeah, I watched the new one tonight. That's why I'm like, I
okay.
did watch it. I'm just
all right. So you're all
losing
caught
my
up.
Brain and forgot that I watched it.
All right.
Yeah. Because this was the one with the reality show girl, right?
Yes.
Yes.
LaDonna.
LaDonna.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen it. I'm happy that they're getting out what's happening. I still feel like a lot of it is a little woke culture, I guess, for lack of a better description. But
no, that's a good way to put it.
But, yeah, because that's what we were saying before. Like, it feels like they're trying to drive that point a little too much. Of, you know, the not being able to trust the cops and everything out and the government and all that. But yeah, I still like it. You definitely can't compare it to the original. I mean, it's nowhere near the original. We said that last time.
No.
But it's still a good show.
Well, I mean, it is clear. So most of the people who were, not clear to me if most people who were taken are people of color, or they're just highlighting the people of color among the group as the main characters, right? But they're mostly people of color who have, the only, like, main 4,400 who is a, I could be wrong, but I think the only main 4,400 who's a Caucasian person is Millie, the hippie chick from the 70s.
And the transgender.
There's also
and
the
who?
The young girl. There's the young girl.
And Noah, the transgender
the
kid.
Singer who just revealed to be transgender. Yeah.
Now I want to ask you guys a question real quick. This is just, what was that?
I don't know.
So,
sorry, I bumped something on my phone. I didn't mean to. I thought maybe they won't. I won't bring attention to it. Sorry.
Right before the press conference, you see them manhandling Noah. Like, they've got three guys on this poor, short, skinny little boy who isn't going to really put up a fight or anything, right? They're leading him out of there. I'm like, oh, he needs to go, you know, we need to take him off site for his medication, which we all know is bullshit. But did either of you, before they explained it, did either of you think, holy shit, they're taking him out of there because he's transgender? That was my first thought. And then the one woman that heals herself is like, I can't believe they're removing him because they don't want anybody to see his face and see how we're being mistreated.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about his face.
They were using the medicine as an excuse. But, yeah, I think they didn't want him to tell what had happened. More so than him being transgender.
But that's what I'm saying. Like,
I thought the same thing. I was like, holy shit, are they doing that because he's transgender? That's a very, like, what? And then it turned out
it was because of his face.
I mean, had they not explained that, I totally would have thought that. I would have kept thinking that. And actually, the doctor. What year is the doctor supposed to be from?
I don't know, but I appreciated that the doctor, as much as he's, like, not from this time, like, he totally accepted it. He's like, you know, I need to learn these things. So I appreciated that he accepted the kid and wants to learn more.
So a couple things here. I think he's from the 19-teens or 20s. I think he might be from World War One or a little bit later. I guess maybe he said something that makes me think that, or it could be his hair that made me think that.
That's my problem. That is my problem. It's his hair. It's driving me crazy.
His hair might be making me have that idea that he's from the teens or 20s.
But that's why I was trying to figure out what year he's from, because I don't know what time period wore their hair like that. That's why I'm like, what? They need to do something with his hair.
Yeah, I think a little bit, I do feel a little bit like everyone's acceptance of all the differences and that he's like, transgender, okay, illness. I think it's a little bit too easy. Now, this is a CW show. They're not really trying to delve into these sort of, you know, big cultural changes over decades or whatever, but I feel like everyone who's from these different decades is adjusting pretty easily to each other. And think that in the original 4400, I remember in particular Mahershala Ali's character, the guy from the Korean War, really had a lot of difficulty adjusting to a supposedly easier racial situation, which we all know is maybe not really the case. But, you know, I one thing this show is doing that's very different from the original is that they continue to keep them in this one location, which I guess is cheaper and easier to show them all in one room together. And it does allow the characters to maybe talk to each other more than in the original, the 4400, in the pilot episode, they were released back to their families or into the community or whatever. This show is definitely more about the government over, you know, the government's pretty shitty in this, right? The government is really over doing it. And the abusive guard, like, that's got to be going somewhere, right? I mean, I really find it kind of not believable. I mean, do I find it believable that guards in certain detention facilities are abusive to their charges? Yes. Do I find it believable that these guards who are keeping their – these people are being kept in a luxury hotel in downtown Detroit. They're not being kept, like, in cages at the border or whatever, right? And that this guy would get away with that, I don't know, particularly when Keisha and Jarrell are supposed to be very – I mean, they're – I don't know. I'm very frustrated. Keisha has had a bad couple episodes. Keisha's not a good – maybe my biggest problem is how these two came to be the main investigators. They're both totally in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And totally.
Yeah. Jarrell at least tries, though. I mean, he's said about four or five times in this episode that he's the advocate for the 4400.
Yeah.
He let us know that he's the advocate for them, which, and he does care. And he's, you know, and it's such a double-edged sword when you're trying to do the right thing and you get shit on for doing, you know, the right thing. It's just, I mean, I got to say, you know, LaDonna, in the first episode, I was like, oh, she's the prissy, you know, rich chick and, you know, whatever. And I was like, she's going to be annoying. And then you find out, you know, and then she's a little better in the second episode. But in this episode, you can, you know, we get a little bit of her backstory and you find out she's actually really smart in that scene where her mother's like, don't you, you know, your job is to, you know, do this, this, and this, you know, to hell with your brain, you know.
Yeah, she's got this like, stage mother who,
you know,
just wants to make
so
money.
So you find out, yeah,
TV.
Yeah, you find out, out she's really smart. So when she, you know, it turns out that she had a plan at the end there. That was pretty awesome. I was kind of happy with that. I definitely liked the third episode better than the second episode. The second episode was kind of like maybe because the Reverend, I don't know what his, I don't remember his character's name, but I'm trying to distance myself from this and the original 4400, you know, for obvious reasons. But every time I hear this guy speak, all I can see is Billy Campbell.
Jordan Collier.
Has he just
Jordan Collier character,
He just reminds me so much of Collier. And I think he's even more annoying than Collier was.
Well, and Collier was, like, starting a cult, basically. And there's a scene... I think this week where the woman from the 1960s whose name is it Cassandra? It's not Cassandra, but it's something like that, right?
You're doing better with names than I am.
The woman who was,
I can't remember anybody's
who was
name.
An activist in the 60s, I think it's Cassandra, but I could be wrong. But she said,
no, I don't know
talking,
what
she said.
Yeah, she said,
oh,
sounds like a cult
like
to me.
Looks like the beginning of a cult to me, and I'm like, yes, because you saw the first show, and you know that it's the beginning of a cult. I like her a lot. I liked her in this episode when the Reverend says, "Will you help me do the birthday party? You look like you obviously are good at this." And she's like, "Oh, you think because I'm a woman?"
And she's like, "Why? Because I'm a woman."
Of my age that I'm going to be, you know, she's, I like her. I think she, I'd like to see her become a main character. I like the, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm a little torn
Go
ahead.
I was just going to say, when she was speaking to Jor-El when they were trying to find their spokesperson, and she's like, wait a minute. She's like, let me get this straight. You want a woman of color. And he was like, yep.
Against her will to be your spokesperson for free. Yeah.
And you're not going to pay me? He's like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My biggest problem, like I said, the third episode, I felt a little better. But I still have a big problem with how at ease everybody is over this. Like, nobody's freaking out. Like, people from, you know, since the aughts,
yeah,
all right,
really
fine.
Fighting it.
I can buy that. I can even buy people maybe from the 80s and 90s being like, all right, cool, time travel, you know, Back to the Future, woohoo. Anybody prior to the 80s, though, they should be flipping out, especially people from the 20s and the 30s, 40s, 50s. I mean, it's just, how the doctor's just taking things in stride. And, you know, it's funny for a show.
Okay with the tech. I mean, not that they're really around technology, but we're not really seeing anything of, like, I'm thinking of, like, Sleepy Hollow and, like, how he was gone for so long. And, I mean, granted, he was gone for longer, but, like, discovered things.
Right.
Like, we don't see anything like that. They're just picking it all up really easily.
But even still, like just their mental state is too accepting, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think they've been – the doctor is – he's a doctor and he takes his oath very seriously, and he's, you know, a very accepting person to begin with. But at the same time, I feel like, oh, so you used to be a girl. I feel like he should have been a little more freaked out by that, given where he has come from. You know what I mean? Like, I have a hard time believing that you come from another century. And you're just like, oh, so girls are turning themselves into boys now. Oh, that's okay. You know, it's almost like the flip side of, you know, we were complaining that it's a little too woke, and, like, it feels like they have an agenda to show, you know, that they're pissed off at the way this country is treating their people. And that's what the show, you know, feel like it's going to be kind of be about, and masked in the sci-fi aspect of the story. But at the same time, they were, like, making the characters you're supposed to be sympathetic for, making them understanding of something they shouldn't be understanding of because of the time they came from, you know? I mean, perfect example.
If they had another character be understanding, it would have fit better. Because, like, it's good that he's understanding,
right.
But you're right. Like, historically, like, probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't
exactly.
Understood
like,
it.
I mean, yeah, I mean... It's just, like, perfect example. Like, Artie and I, prior to the new James Bond movie coming out, we went on a marathon. We watched all 24 movies in a month. And rewatching some of the early Sean Connery movies, I'm watching some of these going, oh, those didn't age well. But then I think, you know what? Now I'm looking at them as, you know, in the time I live now going, oof, that's really not good, especially, you know, like, you know, some of the ways he reacted towards women, you know, this day and age. I mean, it was never good then either, but it was accepted back then because that, you know, the mid-60s, late 60s, that was just all those movies are like that, the way they portray and treat women, you know, and everything. So it makes, you know, watching the different Bonds through, you know, starting in 62. All the way up to now, you know, you see the different time periods and the way things had changed, and the movies were based in the time. So my point is, this character from the 20s shouldn't be so accepting that they're now in 2021.
I guess the thing is, he didn't have to necessarily not be accepting, but he should have been more surprised, I guess. Confused.
Yes.
Well, he
maybe.
Also is,
maybe
is
given
perhaps,
that scene to a different character that was more
he also perhaps is not appropriately blown away by medical advances. Like, he does say to little Donna, he's like, you're really smart. Can you help me read these books and help me understand DNA?
Yeah.
I'm like, DNA? Like, his mind should be blown.
She studies computer science, but she knows DNA. I don't know where that came from.
No, I mean, look, we all learned about DNA in the eighth grade. I get that she could, you know, like, but he's from 1920. He should have his mind blown, but, like,
mm-hmm.
like, but yeah. That's not what this show is.
Yeah, like,
I
want to
read
about the
show.
Genome. Like, how do we even know what that is?
Right, right.
I even thought
right.
about it, but how does he know what that is?
Yes, but this is, you know, that's not what this show is interested in. It's a CW show. They're not dwelling on that. I mean, they're probably looking at, actually, so on the original show, they very quickly started relationships among the characters, which I think are a much slower burn on this version. Like,
mm-hmm.
like, I forget the name of Mahershala's character, but he picks up with Lily almost right away. Like, he's a guy from the 50s, and he takes up, you know how Lily turns out to be the granddaughter of the woman he loved in Korea or whatever? And they, right, and they pursue that very quickly. Also, the characters on the original are more freaked out by their powers. On this show, everyone's like, cool, I got a power.
Mm-hmm.
But on the original, they were all like, oh, shit, what's happening to me? Everyone on this show is like, cool, I got a superpower. No one's really, like, on this show, really that freaked out by anything that's happened to them.
Although, question though, if you could had a superpower though, would you be more freaked out or more like, wow, that's really cool? I feel like it depends the time period you're from. Like, we've seen sci-fi, you know what I mean? Like, we've watched this stuff, and I think I'd be like, oh, that's so cool. But I think, like, maybe somebody from, like, the 1920s or whatever would be more freaked out. Like, I think it
that's
would depend
exact,
on when you're
that's
from.
Exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying, Jamie. It depends on what, that's why I said, like, mid-80s on, I could get anybody being like, oh, cool. I mean, you think about the movies that we've had since those periods and just the way people think. Yeah. Like, LaDonna shouldn't be freaked out by anything because she's seen it all, you know. But somebody from the 50s might be a little more freaked out.
what time period is LaDonna supposed to be from?
She's only been missing for 3 years.
No, I'm mixing them up. I was thinking you meant the one that healed herself. I got them mixed up. I was going to say
she's
from,
like,
the healer's from the 50s.
60s or
50s or
60s. Yeah, I got 50s, it mixed up.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to disagree with you. I think if you hugged your daughter and had a vision of their memories, or if you got angry and shit flew across the room, you would not immediately be like, wow, that's
well, no.
cool. You
no.
kind of freak out.
Well, yeah, no, you'd definitely be freaked out for a moment, at least. And you know what? Not for nothing. The lawyer lady, she was a little freaked out. She was like, whoa. But at the same time, she's, you know, meeting her daughter for the first time, so she's kind of like doesn't have time to really process anything.
Yeah,
I do think that for right now, at least for this early part of the show, the writers are more interested in the issues of confining people and how the government is treating these people. You know, confining them where they are, the way they're treating them, allowing the guards to really be abusive. That's what interests the writers right now. They're going to need to move along with it, though. Like, that's all they're interesting for a drama that's a different kind of show, right? And for the show that we're watching, I think they have limited patience of the viewers to cover that before we have to get into, like, why do they have powers? Where have they been? Like, all the sci-fi element is what this show is really about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what we hope it's about.
Well, yeah. So I think there's limited... I think it's kind of interesting that they're trying to... I mean, the original debuted in 2004. Same year Lost debuted.
Yeah.
And... you know, the issues that they're exploring were not big in 2004. So, you know, it's kind of cool, but that's not the show we're watching. They've got to, like, move that along.
We've seen it all before.
Yeah, definitely.
Right?
Well, the thing is, I mean, this is episode 3, and I lost my patience with it in episode 1. So they definitely have to move along. I think now with what LaDonna just did, I think they're going to have no choice but to let them out in episode 4. Because I don't see how you can continue to hold all those people.
Yeah.
And not for nothing. We're focusing on what, maybe 10 of the 4,400 right now?
Yeah.
Roughly.
That's a good point.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, not for nothing. I mean.
Yeah, they don't show that many out of 4,400. They don't even show big groups. How are they getting them in that room?
out of 4,400 people, you're telling me not one person that was taken and came back had some kind of clout to get,
right.
You know,
yeah.
like
has a family,
you know, like,
them to, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, come on, you know, I mean, there's got to be.
Well, like on the original, Sean, you know, at least he was the nephew of a Homeland Security guy. And Jordan Collier was a very, very wealthy, like, industrialist, right? And had some clout.
Yeah.
But, yeah, these appear to only be people with no clout. Even, like, even this girl who was a reality star has no clout because her mother was a total jerk who just told everyone she was in rehab. Apparently, first of all, who went to rehab for 3 years or however long she's been gone? Nobody, right? But,
by the way, how funny was that shit when she tripped and fell over the side of the building? Laugh.
That was kind of funny. It was kind of poorly.
Well, you had to be really drunk. But...
She tripped over the cable.
She had pointed out earlier those cables were a safety hazard, right? But it was kind of funny the way it was shot and done. Yeah, the way they shot it was kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
At the right time, or maybe the wrong time.
Well, we'll see how it goes. But I really do fear that the purpose of the show is not about the sci-fi aspect, and somebody's just trying to get their message out there about the shitty way that the government treats its people in the world we live in today.
Okay, to be fair, it does treat people pretty shitty in a lot of cases.
Oh no, I'm not disputing that. I just don't need to watch a TV show about it.
We're coming to this TV show to watch a sci-fi show, not to watch that.
A sci-fi show. Yes,
they could have done that without the time travel.
Yeah, and without having that shitty security guard obviously has to probably come to some bad end at some time soon.
And you know what else about that guard? You're telling me all the other guards are cool with him? You tell me not one other guard. There's the Hispanic guard that we meet in the first episode. He doesn't like him, and he don't say shit, though. He just lets them keep, you know what I mean? Like, you're telling me there's nobody's like, dude, this is not cool. Like, I don't understand how this you know, guy is just getting away with all of this.
He beat up, they're not even prisoners, but he hit Noah so hard that he's bruised so badly that he has to be taken away. And nobody from the mayor's office or from the higher-ups is like, this can't happen. Never mind from a human rights perspective, which is the right thing to do, but from a PR perspective, we can't have our people be bruised who have committed no crime and done
nothing
wrong.
They're going to find it out now. Now that she got that video out, it's going to become a big thing, at least.
Now they're going to get out. Now they're going to get out because the show needs – we can't stay in this room for the entire season, right? They have to get out of this room. Yeah.
Right.
So.
All right. Anything else?
Okay.
Don't make me want to watch the original, but I know there's no ending.
The original. Makes you want to rewatch the original? Yeah.
Yeah, but I said that I know.
You know, it's funny.
No.
I got Artie, you know, I've got all these shows I've told Artie about, and the 4,400 is one of the shows that I told him he should watch, and he started watching it a while ago. And he couldn't get into it. I think it was just because, I mean, it was on USA, and I mean, it wasn't the greatest quality and everything. So I think that was part of the problem for him. I said to him watching this, I said, you might want to try it again, because if you do end up enjoying this, you're really going to enjoy the original, because it is far superior. And he goes, but you told me it got canceled, right? I think, yeah. He goes, oh, I ain't going through that shit again. he still brings up Dark Matter. He was so pissed.
Dark Matter. I'm mixing it up, but I love that too.
Artie won't watch any old shows that got canceled. We gotta recommend shows that went to their conclusion. Poor Artie.
Yeah, like the two of us, we watched the nine episodes of My Own Worst Enemy, and he's like, "Why would they cancel this? This was amazing."
That show was so good. You know why? Because Christian Slater
was. Yeah, but Christian Slater finally broke the curse with Mr. Robot. So
yeah, oh yeah, yeah, he finally made to the conclusion.
All right. So, Jamie, we should move along.
We got one more.
Yeah. Did you finish Midnight Mass, Jamie?
No, I did not. I did not.
All right. So I guess Jamie's leaving us.
Yep. You guys can talk about it. That's my fault. I should have watched it, but I didn't realize.
We kind of have
now.
To.
It's been pretty late.
I know. It's been done for a while, though. We have to.
Yeah. No. I know you do. Okay, well, you guys talk about it. You have fun. And
right.
I will talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right. Good night, Jamie.
Good night, Jamie.
Have a good week.
Good night. You too. Bye.
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 All right. So let me just start by saying.
Yeah.
I told you you'd like I knew you'd like it. Now, go ahead. What were you going to say?
It took a long time. It took a long time for me to get into it.
It did.
And the last time we talked about it, I mean, what was the main guy's name? His name was
Riley.
Riley. I was going to say Ryan. Riley. I think the last time we talked about it, I talked about how, like, when Riley got bitten was when I was like, holy shit, the main character just got bitten. What's going on? Right? I mean, the show really started to... Is that when we talked, or have we not talked since then?
No, we did. You hadn't gotten to that point yet. You texted it to us after it happened. The last thing
we
talked about...
So I'm telling you now.
Let's put it this way. You hadn't seen the dog die yet when we last talked.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. There was so much ahead of me yet. I probably still hated it last time we talked. So you were right. Like, I complained a lot about how boring it was, and you were like, no, it's a slow burn. Give it a chance. And I struggled through it for the first few episodes, but it takes a turn when the dog dies, and when things start to come out, like, all of it starts to come together, it becomes more clear who the priest is, which you always knew the priest was shady and in on it. But when it comes out that the priest is the Monsignor who has like reverse aged by being bitten, which is a new thing to me in vampire lore, in vampire shows that we've seen. And if we agree that it's a vampire, not an angel, which is another thing to talk about, but vampires, when they bite you, you don't return to your prime, right?
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know. So for him to have been, like, de-aged and to become this younger version of himself was a really interesting, like, spin on it. Now, I mean, I was always taught in school, and not just in Catholic school, but in, like, Sunday school or whatever, that, like, you know, when you die and you go to heaven, you're in sort of a perfect state. So I'm not saying, like, the Monsignor being younger was a perfect state, but it didn't, like, we should talk, and you mentioned when I was telling you how I hated the show, you were like, no, it's really interesting what they do, the intersection of, like, religion and the vampire legend, and how they made it the angel and all. Which is really I think, AJ, you also said to me, they've finally done something new. Finally, a show that's really got a new idea.
I love the way, you know, and as much as I hated Bev, she was actually the key to the whole thing because she was the one, like, I hated her. I wanted to stab her in the face numerous times. But once I realized her purpose on the show, I didn't mind her as much because I thought it was brilliant the way used the, you know, they took Catholicism and explained the vampire legend through that way, like, and it made sense to me, like her quoting scripture and everything, and you know, knowing what I know about vampire lore and everything, it made sense for, you know, for them to not, you know, and that's why I said the whole thing about it's kind of like the vampire version of The Walking Dead, where there's no such things as vampires in this universe, so it makes sense that they would think the way they thought, being as devout as this community is, and it made perfect sense. I was like, wow, that's really brilliant, because when you look at it from that perspective, never hearing of vampires, it really does make perfect sense. When you're considering this creature to be an angel, it was done, the way he wrote it, it was so brilliantly done. I absolutely loved it and everything, you know? I thought it was so much sense.
I think so, too. I really agree with you the way, first of all, what you're saying about how if you've never heard of vampires, then why would you not think this vampire was an angel? If you never heard of vampires, then you would think this was an angel because it has wings and whatever. And the way they tied in, the way they corrupted Catholicism. So, first of all, Bev is a total corruption of Catholicism, right? And like, I think... I mean, as a Catholic, and not as a Catholic, but if you're a person of faith or you've ever been involved in any faith community, you've never met anyone like her, but you've totally met someone like her. Like, she was, we all know someone like her, they just made Bev to the extreme. Just sort of like, I'm more perfect, I'm more holy, I'm judgmental kind of person, right? Which we've seen before, but they took her to a whole new level. So Bev is really a... and, of course, Bev totally killed that dog. Bev is a real corruption. Bev's a real corruption of faith. And the way – but, you know, I thought of that because I'm thinking of the way they came to worship the Monsignor, worship the angel, the vampire, whatever, is a corruption. And the way they corrupted the scripture, like, so much of this – show takes place in mass, and it's kind of boring. I mean, I found it boring because how many, maybe because of how many hours of my life I've spent in mass, right? Maybe if you haven't spent that many hours in mass, you might have found it kind of interesting. But I was like, oh my God, we're in church again. But the corruption of the scripture and the idea of, like, you know, in the Bible where Jesus says, "This is my blood, drink my blood." And how they sort of, like, take that, they totally take that literally, corrupt it, really, to mean that they should be drinking, like, becoming a vampire and drinking blood is actually what God wants, and you, like, that makes you an angel or whatever. Like, it's just crazy and amazing, and yeah, so well done.
Yeah, in a world and without vampires, it makes perfect sense. It's, you know, if I lived in that town, I might, you know, regardless of what I believed in, I might go, huh, you know, it says this in the Bible, and this is what's happening. Maybe there's something to that, you know what I mean? Like, it really started to make sense.
Yeah. And then you know, there are these people who have sort of fallen, like Riley is not a man. He's lost his faith, right? For any number of reasons, he's lost his faith. And he's going through the motions. And then for him to be the person that the Monsignor decides to bite.
Well, that was an accident.
Riley, well, okay, yeah.
Riley just showed up at the wrong time.
The angel comes in and bites him, and it is at the wrong time. But Riley rejects it, right? Like, Riley... So, part, you know, Riley has these lengthy conversations with Erin, right? That's her name, Erin?
Yeah, Erin.
The girl.
Yep.
They have these lengthy conversations about death and what it means and whatever, and they're sort of long and drawn out. But they do, in the end, have a purpose and a meaning. And in the end, he gets bitten and he still doesn't fight, so to speak. He still doesn't fall for it. He chooses to die rather than to be almost the only person who chooses to die rather than to, not the only, the sheriff also, but he chooses to die and to warn Erin. And he purposely, you know, they go out in the rowboat because he won't be able to turn back from the sun. And, I found that
scene was so good.
It was so, yeah. It was so good because you kind of also didn't see it coming. Even if you saw it coming, you didn't really see it coming, right? The way that was going to play out.
It's funny. I thought they went out there so that he could be away from the Monsignor and everything. He could tell her the whole story. And it wasn't until I realized that the sun was coming up, what he was planning, and I was like, oh, my God. I was like, holy shit. And then I was like, there's still two episodes, and the star just died. I was like,
yep.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And there's two episodes ago, and the star died willingly because this is the way that he could not hurt her and also convince her. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, that's his character's redemption right there. Because he's a person that killed someone in a drunk driving accident. That blew me away also that there was two episodes to go and he was dead and what was going to happen next and who was going to, and then the way it shifts to other people. How did you feel about the part where the two kids are there? I mean, I like the sheriff also, the sheriff does the sheriff get bit? The sheriff does get bitten, right? The sheriff's son converts. I liked that also, how the sheriff and his son were Muslim, and then the son is curious about Catholicism and all this. He ends up getting bitten in the church. The sheriff does not get bitten until maybe very late, right? Because they both pray. They're both praying on the beach, and the sun comes, right, or the fire comes and gets them. The whole island is set on fire.
Yeah.
Erin and company set the whole place on fire. I'm not really sure how they died, but I thought that was really great. He was a great character also.
Raul Foley was really good.
Go ahead,
finish your thought.
I was going to say, in the end, they set the whole island on fire, right? So Erin and the few people who are not changed yet go around, they burn all the boats, and they make it so that none of the bitten can get off the island, and they set the whole place on fire. And they're like, we're going to die, we know it. And only these two kids leave. And I was going to ask you how you felt about that.
I was glad somebody survived.
Well, yeah.
I think, I liked it because you always need a witness. So they're kind of like the witnesses.
Okay. All right,
and,
that's fair.
We had this whole biblical story. You have one guy, one girl, and, they're young. So I kind of saw them as the witnesses.
Huh, interesting. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but that's...
And speaking of Erin, I thought that was great when she sacrificed herself to the vampire to slice its wings while it was feeding on her.
Yeah.
So that the vampire so it couldn't get away. I thought that was really cool. Something else I really appreciated was when the sheriff, when he was talking to Bev about the religion and everything, cause, Bev's one of those characters that, you can tell, she's saying all the right things. She's like, no, I have no problem with you being Muslim and everything, but you can totally tell she can because she's like, my faith is the right faith. Yours is wrong type of person,
yep.
But she tries to, say the right things and everything. But what I really appreciated was because, I'm sure you know as well as I do, a lot of people, you know, don't know anything beyond their own faith a lot of times and look at other faiths as, oh, well, that's wrong and everything. And I really appreciated that they took the time for the sheriff to explain, you know, when he tells him, he's like, we believe in Jesus. We just believe differently, you know. We believe mm-hmm. this, this, and this. And we don't have a problem with your religion. We actually believe a lot of what you believe, you know. And you can totally see Bev's taken back because she, like, was completely clueless. So I thought that – I loved that, you know, it wasn't a lot, but it was enough that they put in there to really, you know, anybody that's watched this guide and go, huh, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Too many times when, you know, TV shows you see about the Muslim religion and everything, they're always the bad guys, you know. They never – I don't remember if you watched Homeland or not, but that was another show where they kind of explained, you know, Muslims a little better – to, you know, to realize that, you know, just because somebody's Muslim doesn't make them a terrorist.
Right. Well, and you know, and, to your point, in this show, the sheriff was the religiously tolerant person.
Yeah.
Right? It was all the Catholics who were, like, intolerant.
Yeah.
Like, there's that scene early on in, like, only the second or third episode where all the cats are dead on the beach. And someone is talking to the sheriff and decides to, like, have a conversation about how he should come to church, right? And you should come to church. And, like, there's this long discussion of trying to convince him to come to church. And they're not tolerant. They're not he's the tolerant person who, you know, is open to other people. And he even in the end tolerates his son wanting to, like, you know, explore another religion.
Yeah.
He's a great character who a small character. He didn't have a huge role, right? But a very sort of important role.
Yeah.
In it.
You know what else I liked a lot? I liked Kristen Lehman. In the last two episodes of Riley's mom, I thought she was really great, especially after Aaron went to her and tried to tell her what happened with Riley and everything. And, you know, he was another character who, and I liked her turn too, because she's, you know, very devout through the whole thing. And then at the end, she's kind of like, wait a minute, what the hell is going on here? I mean, her initial reaction when she talks to Aaron is, you know, she flips on her. And kind of takes, you know, tries to take her down a little bit, which I get to a point because, you know, she's just been told her son is dead. Once, you know, once the climax happens, her husband are like, wait, this ain't right. This is, don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Let's not do this. It's possible to not do this. Yeah. She's a... I don't want to say a good person or a bad person, but, I mean, it's fine to say somebody like Bev is a bad person for sure.
Yeah.
I
mean, Bev is really, you know, even though the Monsignor is the one that started this whole mess, Bev is the only really true villain in this whole thing, actually. Even the vampire isn't the villain, you know? Like, the vampire didn't come to the town looking to turn everybody and everything, you know what I mean? Like, the vampire is kind of not, I don't want to say controlled by the Monsignor, but, you know, I don't even see the vampire as being the evil presence. It's Bev. It really is Bev, you know, and she's got some underlings and everything that she's convinced. But she's really the one leading the charge. Even at the end, Monsignor's like, you know what? I think we might be wrong.
He is. I mean, it's never really clear how he got the vampire into the suitcase or if the vampire even really wanted to come there, right? That's a little, I mean, I guess we assume it wanted to come, but we don't really know who thought
I'm not really,
that was a good idea or why it was trapped in the cave. Like, all that is sort of, like, unclear. And that's fine.
And
I don't need that answer.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
I have a quibble. Go ahead. You might have the same quibble I have.
Might be. I was going to ask you, how do you feel about the last-minute storyline that Sarah is their daughter? Like, I felt like that wasn't even needed. I almost felt like... Was that your quibble?
Yes, that was my quibble. I thought it was unnecessary.
It felt shoehorned in just to give him a reason to change his mind. Like, it was after she died that he was really like, oh, crap. Like, he was kind of before that. You know, he was in the church and he was going to, you know, he was like, you know, go ahead, burn it all down, do what you got to do. I was wrong. I made a mistake. And then she gets shot and he's like, and then he was like, what the hell?
So I thought it was one of the few parts of the storyline that was really unoriginal. And I thought, oh, the priest is fallible and he had sexual
It was unnecessary.
Like, I thought it was unnecessary. It was totally unnecessary. Like, I don't think he needed that motivation to change his mind. I think he could look around him and see the death and destruction and say,
he was already changing his mind before that.
And then to have it be that they were in love and that, you know, he's fathered this child or whatever, I thought it was unnecessary. I thought it was a little bit of a cheap shot, maybe, right? Kind of a cheap shot at the character. Like, you've already taken down religion so hard in a way that is really cool and to, you know, like, with so much in the news about abusive priests and whatever. I'm not saying he abused her, but I'm saying there's so much in the news about, okay, I don't mean to underestimate it, but just for the point of the show, about fallible priests, that to make him have this, I don't know, I thought it was, like, too easy, like a narrative shortcut. And I agree with you, totally unnecessary.
No, I agree.
Like, there was enough, right? Like, it was not a good piece of writing. And as you said, like, there was enough reason for him to change his mind without needing that to happen.
Yeah.
It actually, to me, it would have played better for him to just be this really devout priest who had done something wrong and saw it. Like, to me, he didn't need that. Like, that cheapens his story a little bit. I don't know. So, yeah, I agree with you. That was
it felt unnecessary. That was my main thought.
Yeah. Unnecessary didn't add anything to the story at all.
No, but overall...
As much as I hated it at first, the payoff was amazing. Thank you for encouraging me to watch it, because it paid off big time. It was so good.
Yeah, I knew once you got over the hump. I was the same way. I mean, I started the same way. Even Artie, like, we were both kind of like, this is not what I was expecting. And then, you know, but then once you got, once the dog died, I was all in. I was
anytime
like,
a dog died.
That was it. I didn't care about the cats. That dog died. I was like, that's some bullshit. Poor Joe. He may be the town drunk, but he did not deserve that.
No, he did not. And when you said to me before I really knew, had been into it that deeply, you said to me, this is something that's totally new about horror, totally new storyline, and that you love what they had done, like, meshing it with religion. And I didn't really know that until I watched it, but you're totally right.
Right.
I mean, absolutely. And it's one and done, which is great. Like, there's no more to be had from this. Like, when the kids go away from the island and these two kids get away and I guess they're orphaned and they're alone or whatever, and it's terrible. And you do see the vampire slash angel trying to fly away. It's had its wings slashed by Aaron, right? And it's flying and it's not. To me, it wasn't clear to me if it got away or not.
It's intentionally ambiguous, but you saw the way it was flying. I mean, the kids even say that. They're like, it's flying, you know, they're like, it's flying west. It's trying to be beat the sun, but
beat the sun, yeah.
You know, they both were like, I don't think it's going to make it. Like, I mean, it's intensely ambiguous, not because they want to do a part two or anything like, you know, a second season or something. It's just storytelling wise, you know, how, you know, it's what a lot of great shows do or books or whatever. It's like, you know, it gets into the viewer's mind saying, what do you think? You know, and let us, you know, which is exactly what we're doing now, you know. So, I mean, personally, I feel like the way it was flying, I don't think it outrun the sun at the pace it was going.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm inclined to agree. I feel like this show was more about it having an ending. And the ending of the show wasn't maybe really about that. It was more like, as you said, about somebody like Bev being the main character in the end of the show. And what happens to her. It was great. I'm really glad I watched it. And I've recommended it to a few people, although a couple of friends that are like, I can't, or more like, think it's too scary, which I didn't think it was that scary. I mean, it had some scary, you know how I am, I'm a wimp. I didn't think it was that scary.
Yeah.
It was tense and dramatic. Scary.
I didn't really think
vampires.
There was maybe one or two scenes that I can think of off the top of my head that were kind of like, you know, like kind of like jump scare type thing. Like when you first see the vampire, when the kids are sitting around drinking and getting high. And he turns the flashlight and you see the eyes for a second. And the window scene, that was, I love that. I love the window scene because I did not notice it at first. And all of a sudden, I was like, holy crap, there's the vampire.
That was so subtle, right? Like they didn't barely show the vampire going around the island.
And I tell you, that's what I love about Mike Flanagan. You know, I mean, same thing with Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor. There's never any real serious scary moments, but there's little nuanced things that if you're paying enough attention, there's creepy, scary things like that subtle scene with the vampire in the window, you know?
Yeah.
Mike Flanagan definitely has a knack for subtle horror, and it's paying off for him.
Yeah, this was great. Thank you for recommending it.
You're welcome.
I really enjoyed it.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this week.
It's the end of our show for tonight,
week,
I think, yeah.
Yep. Next week we'll have the same shows except for Lock and Key and Midnight Mass. So I only have one show next week.
What do you,
you know what though? Before I forget, the only thing left that I watch is the 4400. We just did Lock and Key, all the Lock and Key tonight. We did the Midnight Mass finally. So next week you just got your Walking Deads and your Doctor Who and 4400 next week.
That's it, huh? There's nothing new on to watch? Are there some stuff that
I'm aware of.
Like, we're not watching sci-fi zombie show and some of the other stuff, yeah.
I just read today, season 3 of Snowpiercer, January 24th.
Oh, great. Good.
So we got that to look forward to.
Yes, there'll be less stuff as we head into the holidays.
Yep.
All
right. Well, thank you everybody for listening.
Cool. Thank you.
Karen, a pleasure as always. And we'll do it again next week, folks.
All right. See you next week.
Have a good week.
Good night. Bye.
Good night.